Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Monday. Woo! Come on.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. This is Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, to join the busy adventurous show, some serious sports talk. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up, the website, rayandtaytoday.com, your emails, which, Ray, they're getting backed up. We're going to have to read a couple in the air. If we don't get them to today, you know, maybe on Friday's show, but at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Please keep them coming. We love reading them. Funny, some smack talk, you know, some challenges and the sports picks. We love it. And then also Twitter and Facebook, we're interactive at rayandtaytoday. So tweet away at us. Ray, let them know the busy show, and we got a new segment with our man George Reister coming on, man. Tell them how we rocking today.
Yeah, we've got our man George Reister. He's our NFL tight end and Oregon Duck representing. So we've got a segment with him. And, you know, you can never be wrong when you got right on your side. So right, yeah. Never wrong. That's our segment. So George will be calling. We'll be talking to him about the big, big, big matchup, 3 versus 5, Oregon at Stanford Thursday night, 9 o'clock. If you got plans, cancel them, because this is going to be a great
game.
You know, Stanford coach David Shaw was on our show previewing the Stanford season. They had that tough loss against Utah, but other than that, they're a brilliant team. So we'll talk to George about that huge matchup. We'll bring you the breaking news. We got some NASCAR. We got some NFL shenanigans. We've got the college basketball preseason All-America team was announced. Ray and Tay will go a little bit into our fantasy teams. Ray and Tay played each other in basketball and football. And you know,
ouch. Ouch. We'll tell him, but ouch.
Who won those two? then we'll go quickly through the college week that is, week that was. George will come on the show. George Reister will come on the show. And then we'll end the show. Second half of the show is all about the professionals. NFL. We'll talk about NFL Week 9. 5 games that could have gone either way. So there are a bunch of teams out there pretty upset that they didn't win the game. A couple of games that were right there in the balance. A couple of upsets. A couple of favorites that just squeaked away with some victories. And then we'll end the show with a preview of the Monday night football game, Chicago at Green Bay, and then we'll even look ahead to Thursday night's game. So we got a lot to talk about. Busy show.
Let's do it, man. Tell me, first of all, I'm going to have you go to the ropes and tell me my man is number one with 2 races to go. Let them know what happened in Texas with NASCAR Sprint Cup Chase. Tell them.
Well,
Jimmy.
Your man, Jimmy Johnson, looks like he was a 5-time winner. He lost last year. Didn't win last year. He was looking pretty good. He took care of business. He won. And then Dale Earnhardt, Joey Logano, Matt Kenseth, and Casey Kane were the top 5. So it really comes down to 2 drivers, Jimmy Johnson and Matt Kenseth. Kenseth is 7 points back. So these really are the only 2 in contention. I mean, my man Jimmy Johnson blew a tire on the 74th lap, and so he ended up finishing 37th. So he's really out of it. He dropped.
Jeff Gordon.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He dropped down to 6th. So really, it's a 2-man race. Jimmy Johnson, the 5-time champ. Matt Kenseth, the 1-time champ. So they've both won it before. So now it's just a matter of, hey, it's mano y mano.
Matt,
2 more races.
Mano y mano. Hey, you know my money's with Jimmy, but, you know, hey, give Dale Earnhardt Jr. props for, you know, coming in second place in the race. And you know, Kenseth, there's no reason why he can't win it either. So we'll keep you updated, Ray and Tay. We give you a little NASCAR. Listen, you can't say this, ladies and gentlemen. Ray and Tay, we're pretty versatile. You know what I'm saying? We'll bang up there with Mike and the Mad Dog and SVP and Rasulo. You know, our sports knowledge is thorough from the borough we're from. Moneymaker Manhattan, NYNY, NYC, they named it twice because Ray and Tay are nice. But getting to some news, Ray, that's not so nice. We'll leave the NASCAR, and before we get to the hoops, let's go to the NFL. Injuries, different things, but first, I got to say I'm sorry because, you know, I should have listened to Wifey. My wife even said there was probably more to the story. Last week we talked about Jonathan Martin, the guys who were teasing him, the cafeteria, the lineman invited him over, got up, left. He left the team, da-da-da. They're calling him Big Weirdo. Well, turns out, folks, it was way deeper than that. Right now, indefinitely, and they're probably about to release Richie Incognito, who has been on sort of the bad list for years, college, NFL, other teams, evidently was sending threatening messages and racist, words and just terminology towards Jonathan Martin. He was like, kicking your F and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So that's a shame. There's no place for that in a game. And you almost wish, and I give credit to our boy Hasselbeck, Tim Hasselbeck on ESPN. He said it. He's like, the teammates should have stepped up and intervened way before. Like, don't just stand on the sidelines when you see, someone going past the line or crossing the line of standard, whatever your standard practice is for the team bullying. This was way past that, and now the league and the Dolphins are looking like they're going to not only just terminate the contract, but he's suspended indefinitely. So
apparently
Incognito will be
his days in college. And so this doesn't happen overnight. That's the worrisome part, is that,
definitely.
People tolerated it because he was a good football player, but this is not something that just happened from today to today.
No. You're right about that. Even Josh Brown, the kicker for the Giants, said this stuff dated back to college because he played with them. So let's talk about some other news. Last night in the Sunday night game right before the half, Kubiak, the head coach, falls down, thankfully is okay and did not have a heart attack, but was rushed to the hospital, for precautions that came out on the stretcher, the whole nine. He was never unconscious, but Greg Kubiak, that's pretty scary, and, it was unfortunate that, the team went on to, still lose, but it's deeper, much more important that the man is okay, the head coach in his life. And then we had the whole thing with the weekend with John Fox on his bye week, Ray, playing some golf and down there in the Carolinas, and, he had to go to a house that was on the golf course and then to the hospital, and he's going to be out for a while, probably a couple months with heart surgery. With the aorta. So this is
and Kubiak
stress,
are
man.
About the same age, and they're about
52.
The same, been in the league, lifers, and I don't know if they're related or not. We're not doctors. We talk a lot of things, but we don't talk medicine. but on a serious note, this league is very stressful. This coaching profession, and you think about Bill Parcells, and you think about Dan Reeves, and you think about, older men, who have been in this game for a long time. This
with countless hours, right?
Oh, and like they were saying, sometimes they look at this as a badge of honor. Like, the coaches never sleep. They put in 15, 16, 17 hours a day for the whole season, and they take, 2 weeks off, and then they get back at it
for the
combine and the draft. And so, you know what? This is taxing. Get paid a lot, but this is taxing work. So I hope, first and foremost, they get healthy.
Yes, definitely, and you said it right. So just, keeping with the different news and, Darren Sproles got banged up. A couple other players got banged up. We already talked about Thursday night's game with Geno Atkins out for the season. Looks like the Bills release Matt Flynn because E.J. Manuel is back to practice and Thaddeus Lewis will be healthy. So Matt Flynn, who Oh man, the guy just can't keep a job. He keeps losing to these quarterbacks, so he's gone from the Bills. And it looks like our boy who got married to the actress from Scandal, Kerry Washington, over the summer, Nnamdi Asamoah, is probably going to be cut in a week or so, or maybe this week, from the Niners because they're going to activate Mario Manningham and pretty soon Crabtree. So that's unfortunate, and you know. He was just signed a huge deal with the Eagles 2 years ago, remember? It's like...
Well, before that, even, he was the man in Al Davis paid him a lot of money in his last couple
of
years in Oakland. So from being the best cover corner in the league, how quickly his star has fallen. Nnamdi Asamoah seems like a good guy. He seems like he still contributes. So I'm surprised that in a league that goes with a lot of nickel and even dime packages, that Nnamdi Asamoah couldn't hang on. And he's a local kid. He went to Berkeley. He's from the area.
Yeah.
So
gives a lot back to charity, yeah. Oh, but wish him well, man. Hopefully he gets picked up.
Terrell
Pryor left the game for the Raiders, which, you know, hey, it hurt me in fantasy against Ray because for once I benched Brady, which sounds crazy, but in fantasy Brady's been putting up fives and sevens. So I go with Terrell Pryor and boom. He gets hit, he's out of the game. But hopefully he'll be okay, and it doesn't look like it's going to be a serious knee injury. So that's just all the stuff before we get to, like, you know, going around just talking about real football. So let's talk about what's happening in college basketball, man. I'm hyped up. The season will be tipping off soon. We'll talk about the rankings maybe on Friday show. We're not going to get into that. But let's talk about the preseason All-American team. Break it down for me. Who's on there that is like, wow?
You know what? There are some names you know, and there's one stud that you better know.
And you will know.
And you will know. So first, let's start with the old veteran, Doug McDermott, the coach's son, the forward out of Creighton. So he's one forward on the team. And then you've got a forward center in Mitch McGarry, who we got to know really well in the NCAA tournament, where Michigan won five games, came up one game short, and lost in the national championship game. So you got Mitch McGarry from Michigan.
Yeah,
and
he got busy. Yeah.
That Michigan team lost to Louisville. So you've got Russ Smith, who decided to come back. So the guard from Louisville claims his spot. And then you've got Marcus Smart. So clearly,
who came
preseason,
back too.
The top point guard who came back, right? Sophomore from Oklahoma State. So
could have been a lottery
big,
pick.
Strong kid. Yeah, would have probably been a top three pick in the draft. So that's very rare that a kid like that goes back to school. And then you've got the freshman phenom. Now, the last time we had a freshman phenom be a first-team All-American was Harrison Barnes. So that didn't work out so well. I mean, Harrison Barnes is a nice NBA player, but he didn't have that fantastic freshman season that you would have thought. So he ended up staying 2 years and then going into the NBA after that. But Andrew Wiggins, the freshman sensation from Canada, who probably will be either the number one or number two pick as of right now. We haven't seen him play at Kansas
That's ridiculous.
A minute or two. But, yeah, Andrew Wiggins rounds out the five preseason All-Americans. So what do you think? What are your thoughts?
I can't disagree because we just haven't seen him in terms of Wiggins, but you got to believe the press clippings and the hype. Also with him, Julius Randle from Kentucky and Jabari Parker from Duke. But, hey, McGarry, solid big guy, you know, got outplayed by Gorgui Dieng in the finals from Louisville, but McGarry, solid. Russ Smith, kind of a nut. Ray even thought he was related to J.R. Smith because he was such a nut. And you know what? He's not, but he definitely is related on the court with how he plays. He just goes for it. So I kind of like Russ Smith. And he's also a winner. I think Louisville's got a chance to be a top five team again. McDermott, hey, Steph Davis, who was on our show last season, loves McDermott and, you know, talked highly of him. Coach's son, you got to love that. And Marcus Smart is solid. So let's tie up the laces and hoop it up. And talking about guys that we spoke of last season, and there's one guy we spoke of quite a bit. And guess what? He is the player of the week in the Eastern Conference. And his name is MCW. He's already got initials because he had it at Syracuse. But Michael Carter Williams and Kevin Love are the players of the week at the first, you know, not even a full week, half a week or, you know, 6 days in the NBA. So that's kind of amazing. I mean, you got to love that. And, you know, we saw Kevin Love last night. He took care of the Knicks. I believe it's the Sixers, Ray, Rockets, and Timberwolves are the three teams that are all 3-0 and still undefeated. So Michael Carter-Williams and the Sixers, they beat the Heat and the Bulls.
The
no slouches,
also.
Right?
Oh,
the and
Pacers,
of course, the Pacers. Pacers have been playing ball. And I got to tell you, I saw them beat the Pelicans. The Pacers are very, very solid. So let's have a little fun. Let's have a little fun. We're talking some hoops. And in talking, so if people know some fantasy basketball, it's fun to play. You know, it's not as big as fantasy football and probably not as big as fantasy baseball. But fantasy basketball is fun. And, hey, it keeps you attached to the games, the teams, different things. So we're in a league with our boy Oren. It's called Back to Business. You know, Ray and Tay, we keep it going. We were kind of busy. You know, I was MIA with focusing on starting a Ray and Tay league this year and all that stuff. But that's okay. We have one last year. So Ray kind of put it on Tay. He beat me 6-3. But we're going to give you our roster. So I'll start with mine. I lost. So let me get a little shine.
Yeah, losers go first.
I lost 6-3. I won a couple of categories, but, you know, I beat you, like, in blocks. I had less turnovers and I don't know what, like, maybe free throw percentage or something foolishness like that, field goal percentage. So basically, I'm rocking like this. I got Kyrie Irving at my point guard, also with Damian Lillard. In my backcourt, some other guards, I got Tariq Evans from the Pelicans. I got the versatile forwards of Jeff Green and Paul Millsap of the Hawks. So, you know, I like those guys. I picked up Wilson Chandler, but he's been injured, so it looks like he's going to get a drop. I don't know when he's coming back from the Nuggets. I got Marc Gasol and Tyson Chandler, my centers, my big boys. Another forward, you know, I got him playing at utility. I got Andre Iguodala, who's getting busy for
Iguodala,
me already.
Yeah, yes, your boy.
I got him. He's doing work at Golden State, been playing pretty well in a couple of their wins, even though when they lost to the Clippers, he still played well. Also, from the Clippers, I kind of, like, got loaded with the Clippers. I have Harrison Barnes, who's hurt. He'll be back soon. Bogut, another big guy. Jamal Crawford off the bench, another sixth man of the year. And I got Andrew Nicholson, who I think you might have dropped. I picked up at Larry Sanders. Now, I did drop the rookie Otto Porter. He's a little banged up, and so I picked up Francisco Garcia for those 3-0 Rockets. So that's how I'm rocking. I like my squad. We'll see how we bang. You know, you make moves during the season. Sanders and Bogut don't look like they're doing too much for me right off the bat, but we'll see how it goes. Why don't you tell us about your crew that took me out, man?
Yeah, man. You're not ready for my crew.
Oh,
all right. So I made some quick adjustments, but here we go. As my little guys, so I got Ricky Rubio, who's going to roll on some assists for me, especially because Kevin Love is healthy, and he's got some people to pass to now in Minnesota, so he's gonna be my assist guy. I got Eric Gordon and Jameer Nelson and Derrick Rose, so very guard-heavy, point guard-heavy, in fact. So I might have some issues when you can play a guard. I've got
and D-Rose is struggling.
Guard. Yeah, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. Don't worry about that. So my swingmen, I got Gordon Hayward, the young phenom from Butler. You remember him? Almost won himself a national championship. If that shot would have gone through.
Yeah, starts at Utah.
Yeah, and then I got my real strength is in my forwards. I got Kevin Love. I got Dirk Nowitzki. I got Kenneth Faried. I've got Chris Bosh. Dirk Nowitzki, Chris Bosh, Faried, and Derek Favors, who is, I'm hoping, will finally develop. Oh, I forgot Dion Waiters as my another guard. So really, my
got a couple of Utah guys there. You like the Jazz?
Yeah, I got
this
some Utah guys. And then at center, I had to drop. I was light on center, so I've got Kevin Love is a forward center, you know, and obviously in fantasy. Omer Asik and Chris Bosh. I gotta give Tay some credit. He was like, "Yo, your lineup's kind of small. You gotta pick up a center." So he was right, and I had to go pick up a center. So my weakness is really straight shooting, like 3-point shooting. But I have point guards that can give me some assists. I have forwards that can give me some rebounds. I'm not great at block shots, so blocks and threes are going to be my worry. But other than that, I'll have steals, I'll have rebounds, I'll have points, I'll have decent free throw percentage. So we'll see. I might have to make a trade or so. But right now, I'm all right.
Well, you know what? Fantasy basketball and just the basketball season started up. It's exciting. We talked about those teams. There's been some, you know, like just amazing statistical performances from different cats. Anthony Davis, I believe Saturday night, had like 25, 12, 4, 6, and 6. I mean, that's just crazy. Dwight Howard's had crazy stats and MCW, Durant. So it's fun. And some, you know, sometimes early in the season, you got some guys that they just like ball out. I mean, like crazily. I'm a little upset with our Knicks, though. I'm a little upset with them. I don't know. That was not a good loss. They did not look good last night against the
Timberwolves. Well, I think the Knicks have to wait until – I mean, you have to hold back judgment until J.R. Smith comes back, and you got to see what you can get out of Amari, and then you got to see what Andrea Bargnani can do in terms of where he fits in the rotation. Does he start? Does he come off the bench? What kind of role does he play? How do he and Carmelo – and Tyson get along. So it's a little early. I mean, most of the team is back, but I still think with J.R. Smith hurt and the addition of Bargnani, a borderline starter, it takes time, yeah.
No, definitely. So listen, man, let's, as we move along, moving right along, let's move to some college football. I think we need a little – I think I need to throw you a little flavor, you know what I'm saying? Just a little rhythm, because what we got this weekend was some serious, serious college football rant tape. We'll be right back.
Yeah. 365, 24/7. I got one life.
We're back. Yes. We're back to talk some college football. And there were some interesting games, and then there were some blowouts this weekend.
Oh, man.
So a lot of kids on college campuses got up Saturday morning. They went to the tailgate. They were happy. They put on their school colors. They watched the game, and some of them got real depressed because there were some big-time blowouts on Saturday.
Well, let's talk about Michigan State. You picked it. We, you know, previewed it. Michigan just got handled. I think they controlled Michigan's offense. We talked about and gave props to Michigan State, even I did, for their defense. But, you know, that was a clear cut. Michigan State is like, we want to play Ohio State, and we're sort of the second tier or the class, or, you know, at least what could consider to be the class of the Big Ten. So I was pretty impressed with the way Michigan State put it on Michigan. What'd you think about?
Yeah, that D is unbelievable. That Michigan State team. The problem was Michigan couldn't run, and the minute they couldn't run, they keyed. You know, Fitzgerald Toussaint I think ran for 20 yards, so on 8 carries. So they didn't even bother running him the ball. So once you do that, you put a lot of pressure on Gardner, and then that was able to turn the Michigan State defense loose. So look, Michigan State had a more balanced attack. They passed for Cook passed for 250 yards. Langford ran for 120. So they were able to get that balance that Michigan just couldn't find. And the thing was, from start, it was really Michigan State's game. I mean, especially in the second half, and Michigan got blanked. They scored 6 at halftime. They were down 13-6. And then in the second half, Michigan just couldn't move the ball. So you felt like Michigan State was in control, like Janet. They were in control all game. So it was really Michigan State's game start to finish.
Definitely. And then in the second big matchup that we had talked about, ranked teams 18 against 15, Oklahoma State went to Texas Tech. And you know what I thought was interesting, and, you know, our boys, Gus Johnson, who we love, and Charles Davis, friend of the show, has been on a couple of times, you know, was doing the game on Fox. Oklahoma State, I mean, gosh, I really thought Texas Tech had a shot to, you know, sort of being a little bit higher ranked, and they being at home to lose 52-34. I basically thought that they had a shot offensively to do something. But Oklahoma State, when I tell you, they put it on them, and they pretty much had the lead, you know, going throughout the game. I mean, Texas Tech definitely had a big
21-3.
Well, yeah, it was 21-3 and then 21 points for Texas Tech in the second quarter, which was pretty impressive. But, man, I got to give a lot of props to Oklahoma State. That was a performance, you know. And to be honest, man, Chelf, the quarterback, he did his thing, you know. He didn't go crazy for the yardage, you know. He only threw for like 211. But I think just having control of the game, getting two touchdowns, and, you know, the way that they ran
the
ball.
55 times.
Exactly.
And scored 5 touchdowns. You know,
that's what I'm saying. Their running attack is ridiculous.
Running it down your throat.
Yeah. Nah. And you know what? Their defense created turnovers. I mean, they got a bunch of different backs that were getting yardage and had the carries. So it's put it like this. Oklahoma State, it was a definite team win, you know. So the one thing I will say, though, before we even get into, you know, talking about Oregon and Stanford for next week, and we look at the BCS rankings, because of what Florida State did, and we got to talk about this game, it was huge. We give them prop 41-14. In the two big ACC matchups this year, when Florida State played Clemson, they smacked them, and then this time they're at home against Miami, and, you know, it's 3-7. Well, guess what? Yeah, first half, it was tight, 21-14. Florida State comes in, you know, Jameis wasn't exactly on his game. The second half, the poise, the maturity, the defense, which I said was crazy. Florida State could be ranked number one, but they're number two in the country. They leapfrog Oregon 41-14. What did you think about this game and just how impressive, I think, the second half Florida State came out and just served them up.
Put
shut
it
them
on
out.
Them, yeah. They 20-0 in the second half. So first
shut
thing we got to do is take our hats off to the folks in Vegas, right? Because we were saying this was a 21-point game. And we were like, wait a minute, this doesn't even sound right. The number 7 team in the nation, the Miami Hurricanes, the previously undefeated 3-0 in the ACC, 7-0 in the 2013 season, came in and was a 21-point underdog. And, you know,
crazy.
First half was 21-14, so we're like, okay, that's what I thought. And then, boom, 20-0 in the second half, and they end up winning by 27. So Florida State, but here's the scary part. Jameis Winston was 21-29.
Yeah.
He had one touchdown and two interceptions. So he gave them the ball twice, and they still dominated this game. So, you know, and you look at the stats, and it's like, okay, so he threw for 325. They ran for 192. So it was a balanced team, balanced effort. But again, Miami was held. Miami ran the ball, even though they were down in the second half. They ran the ball 29 times, but they only averaged less than 3 yards a carry. So it was similar to what Oklahoma State did. If you stop another team from running the ball, then you put all the pressure on Morris, and Morris only threw for 192 yards, got picked off twice. So,
well, Johnson was tough for them. I think they should have ran Johnson more. They ran a couple other guys. Johnson had 23 attempts, but he was 4.2 yards a carry with 97 yards. And I thought, you know, he was pretty cool. But I think Freeman was a difference maker. I mean, yeah, he didn't get for, you know, so many yards, just 3.4 carry, 78 yards. But he had the 2 touchdowns. So Freeman's touchdowns, I think, were definitely big for Florida State.
Well, look, I think ultimately Florida State, if you start to look ahead, you say to yourself, all right, so you've got Florida State. This is the year. Look, every year is like this probably, but but here we are. Next year, this would be the Final Four, right? It would be the, you know, Stanford-Oregon winner. Let's assume the higher-rated team, Stanford win. I mean, Oregon wins, and then
against
Alabama,
State.
You got to write them in, and then you
right,
got to say
Bama would play Ohio
Florida
State.
State, and then maybe Ohio State. So what a Final Four that would be this year, right? Yeah. You'd have 4 undefeated teams. Now, maybe between now and the conference championship, somebody catches a loss somewhere, but that's pretty good. I mean, that's perfect. Now, I know that people want 8 and 16, but you know what? I'll live with 4, especially this year. The problem is only 2 of them are going to play. So let me ask you this. So if you had your druthers, now we've all been saying Oregon-Alabama. It's just, you know, shaping up to be a great, especially a contrast in styles, you know, southeast, northwest, you know, sort of that traditional program versus this high-flying offense that they have up in Eugene. So What do you think? I mean, do you think that Florida State or Ohio State have a legit argument to play for the national championship and bump one of these teams, especially if nobody loses, right? If everybody wins out.
No, I don't, and I'll tell you this. It's scheduling. Now, Florida State still plays Florida, but it's a down year for Florida, and they play Syracuse, Idaho, whatever. So, you know, they already sort of beat their Miami and Clemson. So after this, Florida State doesn't really play anybody. Oregon plays Stanford, and they still got to go to Arizona, who's pretty tough. And I just think it's got to be Oregon, you know, Oregon against Pac-12, second best, SEC's best. Oregon, Alabama, it's sort of like we wanted it sort of last year. We want to get it this year. But I will say this, Ohio State's a great team, and Braxton Miller had a good game last week, and they, you know, they blew the boys out, you know, out the water. But Ohio State's schedule has been very soft and cupcakes, and we'll see what they do against Michigan and maybe against Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship, but they're just not playing anybody. But, yes, it'd be sort of perfect, right? Bama 1-4, Bama and Ohio State would play each other in the semifinal, and then Oregon State, Florida State. And maybe
Can
you
we
get,
give
you know, you see.
Urban Meyer some credit, though? Because guess is he inherited this schedule, right? He didn't have any, like, he may be able to affect the schedule next year or the year after. Because, you know, these home and homes and some of these, you know, especially with the Big Ten realignment and whatever. Urban Meyer hasn't lost a game. So
no,
he's up in there just.
Was he 24-0 already or 22-0?
Yeah, I mean, this
crazy
dude
already.
Is unbelievable. So
no, listen, I give him all the props
issue.
In the world.
Yeah, but he's a program maker, and this guy came from Utah, went to Florida, won his two national championships, and now he's at Ohio State, and you're thinking, all right, we had a little bit of a, you know, a hiccup at the end of the Jim Tressel era, but we're in good hands. Urban Meyer's the real deal. We are in good hands.
Yeah, no, that's without a doubt. I mean, listen, I can't even – we can't really go against it or whatever. But, you know, let's – I guess we'll, you know, wait for George to come on. But I got to say, I'm interested to see what he thinks. Not just Oregon and Stanford. Let's for ourselves, let's talk about Baylor, Oklahoma. Because I think number 6 against number 10, when you look at the BCS, these two teams coming out of the Big 12, you know, and Oak State has moved up, but those two teams have a chance to be in major bowl games. If Baylor can win and run the table, and we don't know if Bama loses to Auburn or an SEC championship, who's to say that Baylor can't, you know, win out at number 6 in the nation and maybe still be alive for that championship game? That would be a story 2 years removed from RG3. And, you know, that's when you've got to start giving the head coach a lot of credit and just the way the Baylor Bears play. This is going to be a big game against the Sooners on Thursday night on FX1. I believe they probably come on at 8 o'clock. So we got two big, huge games on Thursday night.
7:30 is Oklahoma-Baylor, and then 9 o'clock is Oregon-Stanford, East Coast time.
That's definitely a great double hitter. Some of the games will overlap, and we'll preview also. You got the Redskins and Minnesota, but that's going to be. I mean, are you put it like this? Who are you picking? Baylor, Oklahoma. I mean, who do you think is going to win on Thursday night?
You know what? We underestimated Oklahoma earlier this season, and at the risk of doing it again.
No,
I'm
you did. I gave Oklahoma props.
Okay, I did. So I'm going to do it again, and I think I'm going to go with Baylor. I mean, that offense is unbelievable. I like Baylor at home, and it should be a great matchup. So give us your call real quick. I think we got George calling in.
I'll go with Baylor.
Okay.
I'll go with Baylor, 33-27.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. We got George on the line. Hey, George, is that you?
Yeah, it is me. How you doing?
All right, how you doing?
Good, George.
Good.
Listen, great to have you back, and let our audience know George is probably going to be joining us for the rest of the college football season and breaking things down. We were like, hey, George is right and never wrong. So I like the sound of that, you know. And tell me right off the bat, George, what do you think about the flip-flopping of sort of the top 25 and specifically Florida State and Oregon, and then lead us right into the preview of Oregon and Stanford on Thursday night?
Well, I mean, that's to be expected. I mean, it's just like they played a top the top five team when they played Clemson and won, and then they jumped over us, and then we had a bye this week. Had we played anybody this week, we would have still been in second. But now it'll flip-flop again if Oregon beats Stanford. And then Florida State plays Wake Forest this week, and that is definitely not going to add to the strength of schedule category. And we're playing the fifth team in the country. So if Oregon takes care of business, we will move back up to the number two spot. However, the most important and telling thing that you should really notice when you notice the BCS standings is you need to look at Alabama's ranking. When you look at Alabama's ranking from in week 10, Alabama had a percentage of 0.9937, right? That's almost as high as you can get in the BCS. This week they were 0.9797. So while nobody thinks Alabama can get overtaken for that top spot, the numbers also say that Oregon or Florida State could potentially pass Alabama for the number one spot because Alabama keeps losing points in the USA in first place votes in the USA Today poll and with the computers as well.
Do you think it changes, though? Because let's be honest, out of the teams remaining, I mean, yes, I think, you know, Oregon obviously against Stanford, at Stanford, and then they got to play at Arizona, who's very tough, and the Pac-12 easily the second best conference this year. But Bama still plays LSU, and they have to go to a tough Auburn team at the end of the season.
Yeah, when you look at the SEC, you have to deal with a little bit of a grain of salt. I'm a Pac-12 guy, but at the same time, when you look at a team like Missouri, their schedule, they are now ranked eighth in the country. But when you look in their season, they played Murray State, Toledo, Indiana, and Arkansas State, right? And then they came and beat Vanderbilt, who's at the bottom of the SEC. They beat a beleaguered and injured Georgia, and then they beat a Florida team that we figured out isn't really that good. And they beat Tennessee. The only team that they've really beat worth a grain of salt is South Carolina. And so they're looking up and they're, looked at as one of the top teams in the country when in reality they haven't played anybody. Their goes back to the SEC and they play four terrible non-conference games. And then they get in – and so they pile up all these wins, and then they only play eight conference games for 14 teams. So that's less losses while every other conference plays nine conference games. And so that's more losses for each team in their conference. And so you get all these teams ranked up in the top 25 and higher up because they have less losses because they all don't play each other. And then when they finally do play each other, you get like a 1-7 matchup. And then they don't fall quite as far in the poll, and then their strength of schedule looks higher when that's not really the case.
So, hey, George, let me ask you something. So what do you think about – we talked about this just as you were calling in. So next year, some of this gets resolved because we've got the four-team format. So what do you think about that, and would that have been great to have this year, to have the top four play in a, you know, in a national semifinals, essentially?
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, the way the schedule is set up now, you could – even if you take if it were to start today, you would have Alabama, Florida State, Oregon, and Ohio State. And then what happens to Baylor? Baylor's still left out. That's why you got to play the whole season because reality is five teams ending up undefeated is very unlikely.
Right.
But at the same time, I think you're going to have to start to force some of these schools in some kind of way. I know that the smaller schools, they need to play bigger schools for money purposes and stuff like that.
Right.
But some of these teams are gonna have to schedule like some better teams. Like when you look at we already went over Missouri's schedule, but then look at Alabama's schedule. However, they did play Virginia Tech.
Right, that was a good game.
And Virginia Tech has proved they're not quite that good. However, that is a good schedule. You know what I mean? That you can't say anything about that. But then they have Colorado State, Georgia State, and Chattanooga.
Yeah, three cream puffs. You're right.
That's totally
legit. So George, let's get to it. Not to put the pressure on you, but come on, break it down and give us a score. Thursday night, 9:00. Everybody's watching. We had Coach David Shaw on our show. He's a friend of the show. But give me the pick, man. Oregon, Stanford. Be honest and be fair. Let's hear what George Reister's got to say.
You know, I was pretty close on my UCLA Oregon pick.
Yeah,
by the way,
got to give you credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
And even
I'm
the Tennessee pick when they were up 20, when they were favored by 28.
Yes, I know these things. I'm going to go with a solid 20 point victory versus Stanford. I think that
really?
And it could possibly be more than that. I think the biggest thing is that Stanford, they defended Oregon a little different last year than anybody else did, and we didn't adjust the way we needed to. So I think that this year we are properly prepared to do that, and especially coming off a week off, I think that's really good, and that's taking a page out of Alabama's playbook. Every year before they play either Texas A&M this year, they did it this year, and then also last year and even in the previous years before they play LSU, they always come off a bye week that allows them to get back healthy and to really game plan and put some new things in for the better teams, the way you prepare for your stretch run. And Oregon is going to be better prepared, and I think that if Oregon can put on some points in the beginning of the game, if they can, you know, force Stanford into a scoring match, then you're going to see the score kind of get out of hand as usual, because once that Oregon offense gets going, there's no stopping it.
Hey, George, really quick, we'll get you out of here on this. We got you on the horn, and you're our resident guy now for all things Oregon and then the NFL. So really quickly, this is something that's a little bit of a curveball for most of the fans, but this whole Richie Incognito thing. Now, he's a guy who started his career in Oregon and then didn't actually play there, I don't think. I think he did transfer to Nebraska and then eventually made his way to the NFL. What's your take on this whole deal with Jonathan Martin, who's a Stanford guy, another Pac-12 guy, and this whole notion of where do you draw the line in the locker room between, you know, healthy competition
and maybe what
they're calling bullying and just what's going on down there in Miami?
Okay, I'm going to be very frank and very open and very honest with you guys. Is Richie Incognito, he clearly crossed the line with the racial epithets and threatening to kill him and all of those things. But when you look at the NFL and football in general, it is a bully sport. The biggest, tallest, strongest, fastest, smartest, toughest guy wins. And some of that does spill over into the locker room. So that's why while Richie Incognito, the things that he said and the things that he did, those things cannot be allowed. But on the same note, in the same token, Martin has in a football environment, we're not talking regular real life here. In a football environment, you have to stand up for yourself on some level, because the reality is you can't go to the coach and say, "Coach, Richie's bothering me."
Exactly.
And if you go to the coach and you say, Richie's bothering me, he's going to be like, okay, well, tell him to stop. Like, make him stop something. Because,
yeah,
like, the coach
pop him in the head.
And, right.
Yeah. And so the reality is, if you tell coaches and you tell players, other players, you know, such and such is bothering me, and you don't actually stand up for yourself first, nobody is going to do anything about it, and you're going to be the one out the door because they're going to look at you as soft, they're going to look at you as not tough, and those are things that they look for and are the benchmarks, supposed benchmarks of football players. So, and if he had stood up for himself, I wasn't in the situation he could have, possibly, but from what we've heard so far, if he didn't stand up for himself physically, then other people aren't going to be, other grown men, because it's different when it's in children, but other grown men aren't going to step up and try to defend you when you won't even try to defend yourself. If he was trying to defend himself, then guys would step up and even coaches would step up to his aid. But when you don't, that's the culture of football because it is a bully sport.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it's all about physical and mental
that's
intimidation.
Fair.
And so, you know, within the locker room, you probably have to stand your own ground for that.
And
so,
hopefully
this
puts a light to it, George, and sort of changes it a little bit, because I do agree with you, but someone like a Jonathan Martin, we don't know if he has, God forbid, some sort of, you know, mental issues, and, you know, we've talked about mental health in sports now with Ron Artez and our boy Brandon Marshall, and, you know, this poor kid, I'm not saying poor kid because he's a grown man, but Jonathan Martin could, you know, he could have some different, you know, disabilities that, you know, bullying for him was too much. You know?
Yeah.
He really could. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, those are the things that obviously that we can't know and you can't but you do have to take into consideration. But those are the things that people, even in the locker room, don't know all the details of your personal life and things of that nature. So that's where guys, the majority of guys, do a great job of policing themselves. And I remember when I was in the locker room in Jacksonville, there was a guy who was trying to pick on me, and I was actually hurt at the time, and he just wouldn't let off. And I told him, I said, listen, man, I came to him man-to-man in private. I said, yo, the jokes and all of that, that's cool. You know, it's fun, but you're taking it way too far right now. And, you know, I don't want to cause a problem. You know, let's just cut it out. Just, you know, just be respectful. Okay, yeah, George, yeah, cool. And then a couple days later, it keeps up. And I had just had enough. I had to punch him in the face. I mean, that's not the...
Was
and
that a veteran rookie type of dynamic, or was it just No.
It was like my second year, I think. It was his maybe like sixth or seventh.
Okay.
But at the same point, the reality is after that, we never had another problem. Because when people know that you'll stand up for yourself, and I'm strictly speaking in an NFL locker room. When people know that you will stand up for yourself and that you won't tolerate those type of things, they'll leave you alone because they don't want to actually – because the reality is most people don't actually want to fight. They don't really want to do all those things. They just want to know that you're tough just like they are, even though that that's not necessarily, you know, how you prove it.
Okay.
Great,
that's great,
well,
man.
Thank you so
Thanks
much
for the insight,
insights.
George.
Yeah,
and we'll
really
talk to you next week on Friday and
get
some more picks. And we'll even have to talk to you. You know, we got to run, but we'll even talk to you about that this great performance of Nick Foles and see if he could keep it up for the Eagles with 7 touchdown passes, huh? That's crazy.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
George.
Take
thanks
care.
Thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Take care.
Wow, that was great. George Reister with Ray and Tate today. He's right and never wrong and broke it down, gave us amazing insight that Richie Incognito, the Oregon Ducks, possibly a 20-point win at Stanford. Hey, listen, it leads us right to the NFL, man. Let's keep it moving. And, wow, Ray, he broke it down.
And that's why he's our guy. You know, he gives us the college insight and the pro insight, that whole notion of standing up for yourself in the locker room, you know, and the story of himself getting picked on and essentially stopping the bullying by just saying, hey,
right,
guy, you know, back up. So, wow, that's great insights. But
it is. No, it's amazing. And so, yeah, no, I mean, look, we talk about some bullies on the field in a positive way. I think last night, if I'm being honest, I think we learned something in the Colts' comeback win, 27-24, at Houston. Case Keenum looked good. Andre Johnson was great for you in fantasy. In real life, he was a beast. But what the Colts did, ladies and gentlemen, by beating a Houston team that looked like they were going to get their mojo back and turn their season around, by beating Denver, the Niners, Seahawks, I think the Colts have thrown their hat in the ring with KC, Denver, Cincinnati. Those are the, let's say, top five teams in AFC. I think the Colts have basically proven that they can beat anybody in the NFL. And I think that was a
100%.
Huge win for them.
And don't let them get a running game, because they still couldn't – they still, you
still
know,
couldn't
only
run
ran
it, yeah,
for 69 yards, so they couldn't run it. But that team travels. Now, the loss of our guy is big time, right? So anytime you lose a Hall of Fame wide receiver, so Reggie Wayne's loss is going to cost them. But this team travels because they can play D. They're on offense. When they get that running game together, they've got the top, you know, five, top ten quarterback in Andrew Luck. He's developing out, you know, to be a star. So that's the team to watch out for, the Indianapolis Colts. And on the other side, the Texans are done. So they need to figure out what they want to do next year, what they want to do with Ben Tate and Arian Foster, and if Matt Schaub is their quarterback or Case Keenum, they got to figure that out. But, yeah, that team is done.
No, you're definitely right about that. So, I mean, I think they're done. Obviously, the Falcons are done. So when you start to, you know, look at some of these other games, and you talked about it, like, you know, these teams should have won, whether it was, you know, Buffalo should have won or Tampa should have won. I think what's amazing to me is how a team shows their poise and bounces back and comes back under the fire or under pressure. And I think that's where we got to tip our hat to Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. That fourth quarter comeback and that sort of win that the Seahawks had and the way they came back, it shows you the leadership that you're going to need, even, you know, when you're tested at home. There's no way that Tampa should have lost that game. And so Greg Schiano and the team, I mean, look, you know, they found some players that can play, Tim Wright and Mike James, the running back, and Tyquan Underwood. You know, they're so injured, so give them credit. But Russell Wilson, Ray, he's just clutch, man. That's all I can say about that game.
They were down 21-0, the Seahawks, but you didn't really feel confident that the Bucs were going to win. I mean, I still thought they were going to win, but you just saw Seattle matriculate the ball down the field, score that touchdown in the second, score that touchdown in the third, go into the fourth. Even they got intercepted on the goal line, and he ran it back out to the 7 or 8 yard line, the Tampa Bay guy. And then you said, all right, no worries. They got to the 30 or the 40, then they forced a, you know, big sack, and then they forced them to punt it again, and then Seattle took the ball down and took care of business. So, you know what? This Seattle team, you're a little bit worried because they got out to that 21-point deficit, and they are not, you know, they're in too many close games. And this is at home where they should be blowing people out. But, you know, Seattle is just a team that needs to make it to the playoffs. Hopefully they get healthy. Hope they get Percy Harvin back and get some explosiveness back and make up for the loss of Sidney Rice, because I just don't think Golden Tate and Doug Baldwin are explosive enough. So this is a team, obviously, to be reckoned with. It'll be interesting to see if they can win the division or if the Niners catch them.
Yeah. Look, I got to say this. One thing I love is that, look, we're really at the halfway point now. We're going to preview Green Bay and Chicago in a minute. But, you know, now we're really officially at the halfway point where everybody sort of played their A games. And we're learning about all these teams, both conferences, both divisions, Real quick, we got to shout out the Panthers. They put the Falcons basically to bed, 34-10, kind of dominating. The Redskins showed that even though the Cowboys won, the Redskins are still alive in NFC East, winning 30-24. And then let's talk about it. You didn't believe in them, but your Jets are still alive in the AFC wild card and in the AFC East, 26-20, beat the Saints. I told you, and I really believe this, Rex Ryan along with Andy Reid could be, you know, coach of the year. I think what we got out of, you know, they didn't lock down Drew Brees because it gets you 382 and two touchdowns, but the getting him picked off twice and then Chris Ivory against his old team Ray had me hyped up. Not just because he was on my fantasy team, but when you go for 18 carries for 139 yards and a TD score, you are a man playing ball, and he basically showed New Orleans, I was the back you should have kept. Not Pierre, not Ingram, not Sproles, but me, because I think Chris Ivory is a 1,000-yard back, and that was a huge performance in that Jet win. I want to hear you give the Jets some love. What did you think about that? And
Geno
playing solid. Solid enough.
I'm sorry out to the Jets, because you know, I'm a Jet fan.
No interceptions for Geno, Ray.
I try to stay in the moment, and I try to call it like I see it. Geno Smith did enough. He was 8 for 19 for 115 yards, but he didn't turn it over. And what was great was that the Jets turned Drew Brees over twice. One of them was a little bit of a freak turnover.
Yeah.
But the Jets were able to, and I think this was important, the Jets were able to play from ahead, and they were able to run the ball. Because I think that had the Jets gotten behind New Orleans, and they would have panicked a little bit because their offense is definitely not that explosive. But
yeah.
Adding Chris Ivory's running game really helps Geno Smith, right? Look at who he's throwing it to. Salas, Sudfeld, Nelson, Bohannon, even Josh Cribbs they took off the scrap heap. So the Jets are really, really playing and getting the most out of their talent. 5-4 Jets. I mean, could you imagine? I thought at this point they'd be 2-7 at best, 3-6 maybe. But the Jets, hat off to the Jets, hat off to Rex. The question becomes, do you sign Rex now? I mean, because, you know, he's not going to take a one-year deal, two-year deal. I mean, Rex is going to want another 4 or 5 years. Now, I personally think that they need to change, but Rex is getting, as much as they underachieved last couple years, they're overachieving this year. He's getting as much out of this roster as he can because the roster isn't full of talent. Now, on defense, they look great. And on defense, they put together a nice little team, and the draft picks the last few years have been great. But you know what? Offensively, the Jets are still, I mean, they're banged up, but they're also, subpar.
It's amazing. They have nobody. Even Curley got hurt during the game. I mean, that was an amazing team win. And, kudos to the Jets, Rex Ryan, Geno, Ivory, and the boys. But let's talk about it. They're 9-0, 23-13, KFC. I want some chicken. But the Kansas City Chiefs are nobody's chicken. They go to Buffalo. They have a huge turnover against Jeff Toole when they're on the goal line. The Bills looking to score again. Basically take it to the house, and then another defensive touchdown, two defensive touchdowns to win this game. I don't care what anybody says. You can, you know, and even Tony Dungy last night, he's like, I like the Broncos and Patriots, but let me tell you something. We're going to learn because the Kansas City still plays the Broncos, and I think they play the Bengals and the Colts this year. So we're gonna see it. We're going to hear it on the field. But this AFC is really five teams that are so solid. And the Chiefs stand above everybody because at 9-0, you got to get your respect. Jamal Charles, Alex Smith. Listen, they get Donnie Avery going. Dwayne Bowe's getting a little healthier. You want to give the Chiefs their love, man?
Well, I want to say that if I'm the Buffalo Bills, just like if I'm Houston, if I'm Tampa Bay, if I'm Minnesota, and if I'm San Diego, I'm thinking to myself, I should have won this game. A pick six at the goal line really is what turned this game around. Buffalo probably played better for longer stretches in this game. You know,
CJ Spiller
runs
busy
for 100 yards. Freddie Jackson runs for 77 yards. But let's talk about Kansas City. They're 9-0, but they're a beatable 9-0. Now, in credit, giving them credit, they are the first team in NFL history that's gone 9-0 and has held their every opponent under 17 points. So kudos to that defense. And that defense really is spectacular. My question is on offense and these close games, and I'm not sure. They could be, as great as they are, they could be one and out in the playoffs. So even though Kansas City is 9-0, I think they're the maybe the fourth or fifth best team in the AFC. So good for them. You win the schedule that they put in front of you, and so kudos to the Chiefs, and especially kudos to that Chiefs defense.
Yeah, I got to say, to me, I'm definitely very impressed. And, you know, everyone says, oh, can they score enough to come from behind? Well, they came from behind in this game, and if your defense scores, then maybe you can. You know, I'll leave it at that. So keeping it moving, we talked about those games. Let's kind of move forward. Tonight, Green Bay, Chicago. Look, this is going to be, you know, the NFC Norris, like our boy Chris Berman would say. This is going to be a tough battle, and the question to me really is always about with these teams, number one, who's going to win the turnover battle, and then number two, you know, can McCown in relief for Jay Cutler, you know, he looked good, and he's got the weapons with Bennett. They got to lean on Forte, Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey. I wonder if this will be a shootout, or is Aaron Rodgers and now the new running game of Eddie Lacy too much? I think for me, look, I'm 45 points down in my fantasy league. I need Rodgers and Lacy to come back and give me the win, and I'm going to go with them and I'm going to pick them. But I think McMahon is going to show us that while Cutler's gone, he's no slouch. So I've got a pretty explosive game on Monday Night Football in Green Bay. I got the Packers beating the Bears 30-24. I think it's going to be a good game.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Real quick, I think the Packers are putting it together. They're 5-2. They win this game. They're 6-2. They're looking like an elite team in the NFC. I think their defense is gelling. They've lost some people on offense, but the emergence of Eddie Lacy and the balance that he gives them makes them a tough team. At home, I think they're just too much. I think they win 34-20 against the Bears. I think they win by two touchdowns.
All right. And you know what? We got to talk about Thursday. I mean, look, we said Baylor, Oklahoma, Oregon, Stanford. We got to give our picks. We both said the Baylor. I'm gonna say this real quick before we talk about Thursday Night Football with the Redskins at Minnesota. Oregon, just a quick score. I'll go with Oregon, 33-27 over Stanford. I got to go with the Ducks. I just think it's their year, Ray.
I think so, too. I think it'll be a very close game. Ultimately, Oregon's offense is just a little bit better than Stanford's D, and they'll score enough points to win. I like Oregon 31-28.
Oh, okay. So we both have it a little bit closer than George 20-point blowout, but we all three go with Oregon with George Rice. They're giving his picks on our show. So Redskins. Look, I think that RG3, and really it's about running. Alfred Morris is back. You got the three touchdowns before from Helu. Well, this time you had the three touchdowns from the other running back. I'm forgetting his name. Was it Jones or the young kid? So he got three touchdowns for Redskins. But I'll say this week, when they go to Minnesota, this is Minnesota's last chance, but you don't know who's starting. And it could be Ponder, it could be Freeman, but to me it doesn't really matter. I think offensively the Redskins can outscore them. AP can run all day, but I just don't think they could stop Morris, who can run not as good as AP, but he'll be right there and what he needs. I'll take the Redskins over the Vikings 27-20. I think the Redskins go to Minnesota and get the
really
win on
Terrell
Thursday
Young,
night football.
That's your guy. That's
yeah, Terrell Young, exactly.
Fullback, yeah.
Three touchdowns. God,
so you
nobody
know
had
what?
Him in fantasy.
I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to say that Washington has won a few games, and they've scored some points, but they've also struggled, and they should have lost. They should have lost. San Diego's one of
Chargers.
Those teams that if they didn't have bad play calling and try to run a 5'8", 180 kid up the middle on
Where's
first
Matthews?
Down on the goal
Where's
line.
Ronnie Brown?
Oh, Oh, my goodness.
Everybody screaming at the TV, right?
And then these two rollouts by, and that's your boy Ken Wisenhunt, too, who's a good offensive mind in the NFL. But anyway, I think that Minnesota played well enough against Dallas to win. I think that they've gone back to Christian Ponder. You know I'm not a big fan, but I think that he has enough to prove that they're going to win this game at home. This is one of those win one for the Gipper type moments. I think
they
win.
Is it an AP game?
It's an AP game, but it's also, I don't know if he gets 200, but he'll get 150 and two touchdowns. And, you know, I have him on fantasy, so I'm always pulling for that. But I like Minnesota to hold serve at home here.
All right, so real quick before we end, we got to just mention this. My Steelers got smacked. I say goodnight and goodbye. 55-31, Ike Taylor got hurt. Brady's back. The offense looks ridiculous. And then we have to tip our hats. 409 yards, three quarters, seven touchdowns, 49-20. Ray, Nick Foles is your quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. Quick thoughts before we end the show. What do you say about Nick Foles and that performance?
You know, Michael Vick had some great performances, too, in that offense. So I think it's a combination of a young kid coming into his own and also giving credit to Chip Kelly and his offense. It'll be very interesting to see what Philadelphia does when Michael Vick is fully healthy, but it's a good problem to have. You know, good for him. I don't think it's a Matt Flynn situation where he's a one-game wonder, but I also don't think he's the next Dan Marino. So let's see how much Nick Foles has left in the tank, and let's see how much he does for the rest of the, you know, for the next few weeks, and then we'll see what Chip Kelly decides to do with Michael Vick.
To me, the way Foles gets rid of it and the way that the running game still went, you know, real strong, I gotta ride him. I got to stay with Nick Foles because that – performance to me was beyond clutch. That was a performance. I mean, Nick Foles, yeah, you know, he didn't do anything against the Cowboys when he got knocked out and it was 17-3, but the way that he played and he was just throwing the ball so, you know, quickly in rhythm, DeSean Jackson's a monster. And how about Riley Cooper, ladies and gentlemen? Riley Cooper's an NFL player.
Yes, he is.
So, listen,
you know,
great show.
After all the racial slurs and everything, they didn't cut the guy.
Hey, listen, he's lucky, but you know what? Hey, I bet, you know, he's counted on in the locker room now. You got to say that. So great show. George Reister was great. You know, the picks. You know, listen, we touched on everything. And, you know, thanks for talking sports with friends. We're out, man.
We're out.
See you on Friday. Ray and Tay. We got some big guests coming up in the next 2 weeks, so check us out, man. RayandTayToday.com. We got everything. Peace.